All right, Ecclesiastes chapter 3, we're going to go through this section, verses 1 through 8. Lord willing, we'll get down through verse 11, but 1 through 8 is perhaps, if it's not the most, it's at least the second most well-known part out of Ecclesiastes. In fact, I would say in the world in general, it's the most well-known portion of it. So let's read Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 1 through 8. Who would like to get that for us? Ecclesiastes 3, 1 through 8. Charles?
To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to gain and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace.
Okay, so question number one, I had asked, why is there a time and a season for everything? Any thoughts? Okay, God has a hand, God has a working in this world, and these things fall within that sphere of Him working in this world. Any other thoughts there?
So I think there's really, it's hard to find consistency in life a lot of times. And what you may think is one time is actually the other time, and now it's time to swing your way. Just like it's shifting sand.
Okay.
I think it's similar to his introduction and chapter 1, verses 4 through 9, about this, the cyclical nature of life. And in the creation itself, there are cycles. In generations, there are cycles. And in relationships and emotions and leadership and whatever else there is, there's cycles and seasons.
Okay. If there's cycles and seasons, what does not exist? I'm asking for the opposite. If we didn't have cycles and seasons, what would we have?
Extreme randomness.
Mm-hmm. Well, there
is order. And that's what we see from God is the order. If there wasn't cycles, then nothing would be predictable. How could we know when
okay.
to plant or...
Right. Okay, my mind is somewhere else, but I know exactly where you are. I see exactly what you're saying about. So let's just illustrate it with the seasons of weather, right? We have four seasons, okay? So if we didn't know, you know, spring starts on this day, and we can expect things to warm up generally this time going forward into the summer months, and then we know, okay, September, October, things are cooling down. And if we didn't know that, and, you know, if there was a chance for a massive blizzard and 2 feet of snow in July, it just out of the blue, you know, that would be a problem, right? We would have an issue with that. So I completely get what Ron is talking about. Where my mind was is, we don't have summer all the time. We don't have winter all the time. Even in areas like around the equator, yeah, it's hot and humid all the time, but they're still on this earth and they're still traveling around. There's still changes that occur, and there's certain times for certain things that take place. There is a temporal nature to all things. there is a change as you go through life, and there are changes that we experience. So this is what makes the world work and what makes the world function, is there are these times and seasons for all these different things. If that wasn't there, there's so much that would not be allowed to take place. And I want to dig more on that in just a little bit. But let's go ahead, Zach.
I was just going to ask, you can defer this to later or not at all, but do you think part of this is there's an appropriate time for you to take action on any one of these things? Is it more than just the order of life is as follows?
Yes, yes, yes. Just, yeah. So let's think about three good things. Rick.
Just a simple comment on that. In verse 1, in the New King James, every purpose under heaven.
Okay.
Which I see as a very definite understanding of there's a purpose.
There is a purpose, right, to these things. Good things, bad things in this list. Who wants to share it? I don't want to go deep because I want to go through each one of these as we go down, but what do you classify as good? What do you classify as bad?
For me, the one that sticks out is a time to embrace and a time to refrain.
As good or bad?
A time to embrace is fine, but it can't be all the time. And there's a lot of so-called Christians that embrace that feeling thing.
Good or bad?
Good.
Good to embrace.
Good to embrace. And good to not embrace at the right time.
It depends if you're doing it in the correct season or not, if it's good or bad.
Zach.
I wrote killing, bad. I know there's some maybe death penalty arguments from this verse, but I classified that as bad, or warring, unless it's mistaken, warring is bad.
Anybody else?
Birth was good. People,
life,
and babies and families.
Time to be born. Okay, good. All right. Now here's the thing. Mike and I are on the same page. It depends. Depends. There is a time, as he's saying here, there is a time and a purpose for everything under heaven. God has set it up. These things belong in this world. The right circumstances, right situation, they belong and they are needed in this world. And so there is this time and purpose, and really I was tricking you in the good or bad. But there are things that we generally see as bad, and there's things that we generally see as good, but if it's not the right purpose, or it's not the right time, the right purpose there, if it's not in the right season, it's not good. It's just not good.
Just what you're saying is every one of these, there is a time for it. And because of that, it can be considered good.
Mm-hmm.
Because it falls into the time frame that it should be done.
All right, so let's dig into this a little bit. A time to be born. Camp on that for a second. What about the idea of a time to be born? What do you think of when you think of a time to be born? Okay, there's a new life in the world, a birth. A baby comes. Generally, what's associated with the birth of a baby?
Happiness.
Happiness, joy, rejoicing. The baby's born. The baby is healthy. You know, everything's okay. Mom is healthy. There's a time of joy that surrounds that. And really, see, some of these things, when you read through here, there would be a, I guess, concrete physical application, but there's also a metaphorical application, a beginning. What did Mordecai tell Esther when he was trying to convince her, you need to take action?
She know that she wasn't put
there to do. Okay. You come into the kingdom for such a time as this. That same principle could be, how do you know you're not born for this time, for this situation, you've been brought into this circumstance to do good. Something I've always seen, God raises up leaders when they're needed, right? You study through the Bible, there are people born at certain times and God works in their life to bring them to a point. I mean, David's a great example, right? Or Joseph. You know, there was a time for a Joseph to be born and for him to go down to Egypt and be there to help the children of Israel when the famine came and working out God's plan of salvation. So there's a time, if you will, in that sense to be born, and that is a part of life. But then what does he say? A time to be born and what?
A time to die.
Okay, a time to die. When you think of death, what do you think of?
Mourning, sadness.
Can be.
Also can be.
How about just in the very strict, our reaction to it, death. What is death?
The end of life on this earth.
End of life on this earth, exit from this world. It's the end, right? Can you think of anyone in the Bible, they died at the right time for a very specific purpose? Of course, there's a couple times. There's Christ. Let's set Christ aside.
Samson
died, right? Taking the Philistines down with him and their false gods there and a strike against them.
I think maybe Stephen also.
Stephen? There's one, though, that the Lord particularly says, He died for a very specific reason. What about Lazarus? He said, look, Lazarus, he's died to glorify God because he was going to go raise him, right? So there was a time to die in that sense, a very specific thing for him. But there is a time to die. Everything then discussed in verses 2-8 fit within these two, between birth and death. Everything else is in there. In a sense, we're caught in time, right? We are subject to time, living in this world. We're transiting through it. We're moving through life, if you want to put it that way. And there are seasons of life where, you know, these things may come and go within our own lives. And, you know, you've got that. It's true for an individual, it's true for a family, it's true for a church, it's true for nations. There are seasons, there are times, there are changes. All of us could probably look back and realize, for those of us who have families and things, you know, there was a certain season of life before you got married, a certain season of life when you first got married. There's a season of life when you're raising your children. For those who have older children, there's another season of life. There's different things, and things come and go, and that happens in careers, and it happens for families, and all kinds of things that go on there that you transit through in this world, and there's no escaping it. Nobody is free of this. Everybody must deal with it. Everyone must experience it between birth and death. So he says there's a time to plant and a time to pluck what is planted. So what's the idea of planting?
Food.
Okay, you can plant food.
Yeah.
All right, anything else? How about it's necessary to plant food? To plant stuff, right? We have to do that if we hope to get a crop. Somebody's got to do some planting. Now, nowadays, it's mostly farmers, right? Big farms, they plant the food, they raise the food, they get the food to the grocery store. We get that for the most part. That's how we operate. But you got to plant. But there's planting, and there's a time for that planting. And it's a good thing that needs to be done. What about a time to pluck what is planted?
Time for harvest.
Time for harvest.
You have to harvest it.
Anybody a big flower bed, planting bed type person that you I mean, that's just what you like to do. Anybody? No. Okay, Nancy. Right. There's a time to plant stuff there. There's a time to pull stuff out. Right. And sometimes you get tired of that, whatever's out there, and you're like, we're completely redoing them. And you go out and you jerk it all out and you put all new stuff in. Time to plant, time to pluck. Or as the New American Standard says, I believe it's, you know, time to uproot. There's time to put stuff down, time to pull stuff out. We all understand that. Very simple. All right. So verse 3, time to kill, the time to heal. This is not the same word, as I understand. Again, I'm not a Hebrew scholar, but in Exodus chapter 20, where it forbids killing, that's the idea of a murder there. But there is a time to kill. What would that time to kill be? Zach brought it up a minute ago.
You kill during a war.
That's true. He talks about war a little bit later, very specifically.
Death penalty.
Death penalty. Where is that supported in the Bible?
Genesis,
first place, Genesis chapter 9. Exactly. Is it supported in the New Testament? Romans 13, where it says that the governing authorities or the powers that be do not bear the sword in vain. It has reference to that sword because it's talking about beheading, putting people to death for certain crimes that are committed. So there is a place and a time for killing. Is there any other time for killing? What did Jesus tell the disciples in Luke 22:36?
Go get a sword.
If you don't have a sword, sell your cloak, go get one. Why did he tell them that? Self-defense. There's no other reason. He's basically telling them, look, you're going to get out there in the world, and there may be situations where you've got to defend yourself. And sometimes that defending yourself means you have to end somebody else's life. To stop them. Or if they're attacking someone in your family or another innocent person, you may have to step in. And the only way to stop them is you have to take their life. There is a time to kill. But there's also a time for what? Time to heal. How would that come about? Time to kill, time to heal. Okay, if you have punishment, extreme, death penalty on one side, what would the heal be?
Peace.
War and peace, we'll talk about that here in a minute. Anybody ever heard of pardon? You pardon a criminal, you pardon them for the crime that they have committed, so there's a time to heal. You know, in this country, after the Civil War, there were a lot of people in the North that they wanted scorched earth, go down, kill all those rebels that were involved, and get the generals and get all the prominent leaders and put them all to death. And what did we do? No, we're not doing that. Right? Just like Saul, King Saul that we recently studied, you know, when he established his throne very solidly and the people said, let's go get those who oppose you and let's put them to death. What do you say? No, we're not going to do that. So there was a time to heal, a time to bring people back together. There's cases like that, you know, in wars that have taken place. The aggressor attacks, the one who's defending themselves wins the war, but they don't take retribution. So there's a time to kill, there's a time to heal, a time for pardon, a time for mercy. All right, there's a time to break down and a time to build. What would break down be?
Get the sense that this is saying something's not working out, it's time to abandon that project. Time to start over.
Okay.
As Mike and you kind of said, when the time is right. You don't give up on something because it's hard work or it's not going exactly the way you want it. But at some point, when it's obvious, it's time to start over with that.
Right. And in your field of work, what are you doing right now?
Well,
what has been done to that building? And
the existing building is all that was needs demolition work so that you can put new work in.
Time to break down. It's time. There's time to get in there and break stuff down and get stuff out and clean that up. Time to break it down. Philip?
That was pretty much my comment.
Oh, I'm sorry. All right. Yeah. There's time to break down nations. Right? There's a time where things need to be torn down and redone. There's a time for that in business. Sometimes companies go through, they say restructuring maybe, and they go in and they just wipe out huge swaths of the business, of managers, of leaders, of workers, and they're like, it's not working. We got to redo this. So they break it down. Sometimes there's a time for breaking down an individual. I know in the military, in basic training, that's what that's supposed to be. They're supposed to break down everyone to the same level, and then they build them all up so they're all together, they're all alike, and they function then better as a unit. So there's a time to break down and a time to build. So what's on the flip side of that? So what are you doing now, Zach, down there? Or should you be doing or hope to do?
Well, a lot of restoration of old stuff, but we're erecting new steel and new wood and new finishes, so stuff like that.
Yeah, a lot of stuff like that. You know, walls where there were no walls and all kinds of stuff, outlets, electrical, all that kind of thing. So yeah, there's a time to build a nation, time to build a business, time to build a church.
And I always kind of, whenever I read this, it occurs to me that, you know, maybe your relationships, sometimes you got to, you know, tear down some relationships in order to do the right thing, and then you need to foster other relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly right. All right. Verse 4, time to weep, time to laugh. When you think of weep, what do you think of? What does the Bible say about Jesus when he got out to Lazarus' tomb? He wept. Which, by the way, just I want to drive this point home. Jesus wept publicly. There's no shame in us weeping publicly, crying. You know, sometimes men get the idea, well, I can't show emotion, I can't break down, I can't be sad around other people, but we can be. It's perfectly accepted. There is a time to weep. So weeping, when you think of weeping, because we're going to contrast it here in just a minute, time to mourn, time to dance. So weeping is more of an instantaneous response. In the moment, it hits you. That emotion gets to you, and then you weep. It's a physical reaction, and generally of short duration. A time to laugh. What is that?
I was looking at Romans 12, 15. Rejoice with those who rejoice, and weep with those.
Okay. Yeah. Weep with those who are weeping. When you think of laughing, what do you think of? There's happiness of some sort. In the moment, you hear something funny, you see something funny, and it, for many of us, it's almost involuntary that we laugh. I mean, how many times have you been scrolling through your phone and you've chuckled and the people around you are like, what are you laughing at? And you just couldn't help it because it was... whatever was on your phone was stupid and you laughed at it. But it's one of those instantaneous things. So weep and laugh, short duration. It's there, boom, then it's gone. Now, mourn and dance. When you think of mourn, what do you think of? Heaviness of heart. When do people generally mourn? Usually death. Yeah, specifically with somebody that you were very close to. Like when a spouse loses their spouse, they can mourn for years and be feeling that grief, right? That's not weeping, and they may weep on occasions throughout there, but they're mourning. Their spirit is really down, and so it's ongoing. It goes for a while, and there's a lot of reflection and thinking about things, meditating on things. Well, when you think about that mourning, then what do you think about the dancing? When he says time to mourn and a time to dance.
Maybe times where celebration is appropriate. Whether that's a birth or a baptism or the restoration of a soul. That throws sin in this verse. It's a time to mourn. Yes, when people die and death is a consequence of sin, we can make that argument. But when a living person sins, there's time to mourn. If you're the one who caused that, or it's a sin upon a church, it brings reproach, and then there's lots to go on.
What does James 4:9 say along those lines? Yes, let your laughter be turned to mourning, your joy to gloom. Right? Exactly talking about what you're saying about sin. Sin is something that we should be sad over, we should mourn over, instead of being happy and going along in it. Now, the flip side of that is, you know, Acts 8:39 said the eunuch did what? Went on his way rejoicing. He had been saved. He was full of joy. So, like Zach said, this idea of celebration is what the dancing is. It's not going to the club and doing that, right? It's not authorizing lewdness and inappropriate behavior. It's not doing that. David danced in 2 Samuel chapter 6, when they're taking the ark in, and his wife was upset that he was out there dancing. It wasn't because David was out there acting in a lewd manner. She just didn't think it was appropriate for the king to be out there dancing and whirling about. And it says he's wearing a linen ephod. it's telling us he had a spiritual mindset in it, but he was rejoicing in the ark coming in, right? So, a time to mourn. There is a time for mourning. There's a time to be sad and to reflect on things. And there's a time to dance. There is a time to celebrate and be happy. You know, for whatever reason, probably everybody knows somebody like this, but there are Christians like this. Happiness, joy, they don't think it should be a part of life. No, it is a part of life. There is a time to rejoice and be excited and happy, particularly when somebody is saved and turns to the Lord or repents of their sin and comes back to Him. All right, anything through verse 4?
Sometimes the weeping and the laughing and the celebration happens all at the same time.
Yes.
When someone moves away and you're sad for that, but you're so happy for them, or whatever the case.
Yes, yes. There would be many occasions where it's a paradox as to I've got all these emotions. I mean, very often at funerals, visitations, people are there. They're sad about the loss of somebody they love, but they're laughing. They can even laugh to the point of crying. They can even be crying in sadness and then talking to someone and they begin to laugh, right? As tears are running down their face. So, yeah, all that goes together. All right, so verse 5 then. Time to cast away stones, a time to gather stones. When you think of that, casting away stones, what might that be?
That, to me, gives the idea of clearing an area. And then the gathering
Yes. Yes. Either way. Either way. So if you're going to plant a field or you're going to build on that plot of ground, you got to get in there and get the stones off of it. Time to gather can be for building, or even, I know this is a reference a little bit later, but in a time of war, very often in ancient times, they would take and they would put stones in the enemy's field so they couldn't get in there and work it. It just, you know, cause havoc is what they wanted to do. So yeah, there's a time to cast away and a time to gather stones. There's a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. Gail, you want to elaborate on that? Embrace or refrain from embracing?
Well,
figured I'd give you the chance now.
Okay. Yeah. It's what Mike said.
Okay. When you think of embrace, what do you think of?
Caring.
Okay, caring.
Warm hug.
A warm hug.
Yeah.
All right. When Lazarus died, he was carried by angels to Abraham's bosom. Right, he was embraced by him. There's a time for embracing in this life to give comfort, support, encouragement. It can be even a sign of endorsing someone to embrace them, especially if you embrace them publicly. It's a sign of support. You're aligned with them. You're on their side, so to speak. Refrain from embracing.
I think another way to read this is that there's a time to draw near and there's a time to withdraw. There's a time to show affection and there's a time not to show affection. Whether that, again, that's because of a sin that's occurred, or I don't know, there might be a marital reason why we need to talk before we to start hugging each other or whatever. There's something we need to figure out. There's a time for that and there's a time to, well, be affectionate.
Okay, there is a on the first part that you said, you know, 2 John 9-11. You don't extend the right hand of fellowship to somebody who's teaching error. You don't do that. So there's a time to refrain from embracing or showing support or encouraging them, things like that. But there's also a time to refrain from embracing because you are doing nothing but hurting that person. Anybody want to give me an example? Let me ask you this. Have y'all known of parents who they put a huge bubble around their children? Their children never, they're always working to prevent any type of hurt or pain or sorrow in their child's life. And maybe some of you are like, well, of course. But what do you have to allow to happen? We're not talking about matters of sin and unrighteousness. We're not talking about that. Talking about children, and all of us need to go through trials. We need to face challenges. You know, we can't go and fight every battle for our child. We can't go to the school and, you know, from kindergarten through high school and into college, and you're there and you're sticking up for your child to all their peers and to all their teachers and to the professors and the administration. If we're doing that, we're making a bad mistake. There are times when you need to say, you need to take this on. I know it's hard, I know it's difficult, but you need to step up to the plate here instead of going and shielding them from everything. They need to learn to deal with those things, so allow them to grow. Any other thoughts there? All right. Well, verse 6 then. Time to gain and a time to lose. Well, isn't it always a time to gain? Don't we all want to gain?
I was thinking about this, that there's a time to acquire and there's a time to dispense. And in our life, you know, we run cycles as well. You know, like learn, earn, and return.
Okay, well put. 1 Timothy 5:8, what does that tell us? 1 Timothy 5:8. What you got, Rick?
But if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially those of his household, he is denied the faith and is worse than the man.
Okay. How do we typically use that verse? Man needs to support his family. He needs to go out and gain. He needs to go out and earn. He needs to go out and bring home what's needed to take care of his family, right? And that is absolutely true. What does 1 Timothy 5:16 say? Anybody? Who'll read it? Go ahead, John.
If any believing woman has relatives who are widows, believing woman has relatives who are widows, let her care for them. Let the church not be burdened so that it may care for those who are really widows.
Okay. Going along with that teaching in the Bible, honor your father and mother. You know, the Jews had an issue with it. Oh, no. What I have to be able to give them actually belongs to God, so I can't help mom and dad. What's he saying in 1 Timothy 5? Well, I saved up that money for a vacation, Mom. I'm sorry. I don't have any grocery money for you.
That's 15, right?
What's that?
You said 16.
1 Timothy 5:16.
Okay. Yeah.
The point is, There's a time to go out. There's a time to earn. As Ron was saying, there's a time for us to put back, to save, to make sure things are taken care of. But you know what? There's a time where we got to let that go. We got to be thinking about, there are other people. There are people specifically, 1 Timothy 5, my family, my parents, my wife's parents, they may need. And you know what? I may have to give things up. I may have to sacrifice in order to help them out. Ephesians 4:28 says, let him who steals steal no longer, but rather let him labor with his hands, that he may provide not only for himself, but to give those who have need. See, there's a time to gain and a time to lose. Time to get, time to give, if you will. Is there something else, John?
Yeah, you know, when you think about God's attitude towards us, there were times where he let his people go, because he was done with them. But then there's a time that he was seeking his people. He sent Christ for all men. He sought us to gain us back. So there were times where he let it go, let his people go, but there ultimately then he went out and sought them and found them again.
Yep. He says now in Ecclesiastes 3, second part of verse 6, a time to keep and a time to throw away. Time to keep. What that might be. What that might be. What might that be? Okay. How about this? 2 Timothy 4:13, Paul is writing to Timothy and tells him, bring the books, especially the parchments. He had held on to some books, right? Some body of knowledge, and says, hey, I want those. I'm holding on to them. Bring them to me. Acts chapter 19, the people at Ephesus did what? Does anybody remember? They burned books. There's a time to keep, and there's a time to throw away, get rid of trash, right? Stuff that you just don't need. Time to keep. Time to throw away. And that could be things that, you know, like them, they burn their books of magic, you know, getting rid of that garbage. It could be other things that you get rid of out of your life. Time to keep, time to throw away. Time to tear and a time to sow. What is tearing? Time to tear? What is tear? Rip. Shred, destroy, pull apart, right? Could be expressing grief or righteous indignation. You know, the Jews very often, they would tear their clothes when they were upset about something, right? So there's a time to tear. I believe it talks about Mordecai. You know, he tore his clothes when he found out the edict that had been given. So there is distress that's involved in that. A time to sow is what? If you think it contrasts to tear, what would it be?
Repair or make.
Yes, repair, mend things. Time. It's kind of like this. There's time to pull things together. There's a time to tear, express that grief. But then there's time to pull it together and get going. Right? Think of Elijah. Remember after the contest up on Mount Carmel, and then Ahab went and told Jezebel what had happened, and she put out a death warrant on Elijah, and Elijah took off, and he was in despair. He was in grief. And what did God do with him?
Get up and get out.
You got to go. I got other work for you to do. Now pull it together, Elijah, and get going. There's a time to tear. It's a time to sow, time to mend, time to pull things together, if you will. A time to keep silent and a time to speak. What is it to keep silent? It's a lot of you should know because you're silent tonight.
Well, in times of distress, it's not always advisable to be talking. Sometimes you need to be quiet and be safe. And other times you need to speak up and say something. But that's not always the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you don't understand the subject or the problem, that's a good time to be silent.
Very much so. Ron?
Nancy's dad once said, you don't have to say everything you think. Because sometimes you say things that are found to be very offensive, even those thoughts went through your mind. You're better off retaining them to yourself.
We all need very good filters.
Yes.
We all need it, that's for sure. Be swift to what?
Hear.
And slow to speak, right? James 1:19. There's a time for us to zip it and just listen. Don't interrupt. Don't try to correct. Don't try to jump in and derail or anything like that, but just to listen and consider. And as John said, there are times when he mentioned distress, it could be an emotional situation that we just want to react. We need to be careful. There's a time just to let me listen, let me hear them out. Zach.
We don't know for sure it's going to happen. We have a decent idea, I guess, but we're not going to be sitting up there. But God, you know, Matthew 7:21, the whole, Lord, didn't we prophesy your name? So we might have something there, but we're going to sit in front of God. It's going to be pronounced. We're not going to have anything to say.
Right. There is a time to speak. So if there's a time to be silent, what are we talking about? Time to speak. It's a time to answer. There are times to object. You know, and a lot of the ability to know the difference between silence and speaking comes with age, experience, wisdom over time that, okay, yeah, they needed to be interrupted. They need to be shut down. That doesn't need to be said. Sometimes, like Ron was saying, if somebody is being offensive, especially, you know, if it's someone who's younger is being offensive, just a knucklehead, you know, shut them down. Hey, cut it out. We're not having that here. That type of thing. So question number four I'd ask, when is the time to hate? What and why? The time to love. Time to hate. Love what? Christ. Anything else?
Neighbor.
Anything else?
Myself.
Okay, love your neighbor as yourself. We definitely are supposed to love ourselves. Have self-respect.
Are we supposed to love our enemies?
Love our enemies? right? Can be hard, but we're supposed to love the truth. So there's a time to love. There's a time to hate. What does the Bible say about hating? Through your precepts, I get understanding. Therefore, I hate every false way.
There are times to hate father or mother or brother or sister or brother-in-law or whatever the list is. And that is a replacement of loving Jesus, to love less.
Yes, in the relative sense between the two, exactly right. So we are to hate sin and error is what we are to do. Hate the sin and the error in this world and in our own lives. Now, he says there's a time for war and a time for peace. What is the point and purpose of war? How could there be ever be a time for war?
To eradicate the sin.
Okay. That's right. What did God command the children of Israel to do under Joshua?
Why?
He was purging the land of wickedness. That was his intent in that. So there's a time of war. I think all of us can agree, looking back at World War II, and we could look at other wars, but at World War II, there was a time for war. We needed to jump in, and we needed to go over there, and we needed to fight it. We needed to put a stop to Hitler, put a stop to the Japanese. We needed to do that. That was necessary. And God set this world up where that is a legitimate activity in this world, to suppress evil, defend a nation, defend the innocent. Now, there's a time for peace. How does that fit in? Should we go to war over everything? Right? There's... You know, sometimes I talk about warmongers, and then there are others who are pacifists. Well, there's something in between where you have good discernment and judgment. Yeah, we should go to war here, but no, let's have peace. Let's sue for peace. Let's not get involved in the conflict. There's a time to end war. There's a time to avoid war. So those are both legitimate things, time of war and a time of peace. There's a time and a purpose for everything under heaven. Any other thoughts there? So I think we're just going to wrap it up and pick up at verse 9, Lord willing, next week.